Is it going to rain today? Are you sure? When it comes to the weather, nothing is absolutely certain, which is why meteorologists always refer to a 10 or 20% chance of rain. This way of quantifying uncertainty has become standard in many sciences, and maybe we could benefit from incorporating it into our own lives as well. That's one of the ideas in the new book, The Primacy of Doubt, From Quantum Physics to Climate Change, How the Science of Uncertainty Can Help Us Understand Our Chaotic World, by Tim Palmer. Tim is a professor of physics at the University of Oxford and has been a pioneer in the field of weather and climate forecasting. But his interests are a lot broader than that, as he shares in these five big ideas from his book.
My name's Tim Palmer. I'm a physicist at the University of Oxford. I've had a varied research career. For my PhD, I studied Einstein's theory of general relativity, a theory that predicts the existence of black holes. However, for much of my career, I studied Earth's climate and developed a new way of predicting weather and climate, which allows us to incorporate estimates of uncertainty in the predictions. More recently, I've become interested in the problem of cognition in the brain. What is it that makes us the free-willed, creative, and conscious beings that we are? I've just published a book called The Primacy of Doubt, which tries to bring these strands together. Broadly speaking, it's a book about the science of uncertainty across a range of applied and fundamental sciences, from climate change to quantum physics to neuroscience. If all that sounds a bit scary and highfalutin, please let me add that I've tried to write the book in a way that's accessible to everyone. I was pleased to have been interviewed recently by the editor of the Oxford Alumnus magazine, himself a historian with no science background, who said how much he enjoyed reading the book and indeed was inspired and challenged by it. I hope you will be too. If you read the book, you may understand not only more about the world around you, but also more about yourself. By the way, the title of the book is taken from James Gleick's biography of the theoretical physicist Richard Feynman. Gleick writes that he, Feynman, believed in the primacy of doubt, not as a blemish on our ability to know, but as the essence of knowing. I'm going to discuss five insights from the book, starting at the practical end of things and working to the most metaphysical, the thorny topic of free will and moral responsibility. Insight number one. Whoa, where did that come from? Systems can be stable and predictable for much of the time. Then suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, they become dangerously unpredictable. The economy proceeds from year to year with growth and inflation under control until suddenly there's an unpredicted global financial crash with economic mayhem lasting years. Similarly, global health gradually improves year on year until out of the blue, a pandemic strikes, killing millions. And the world can be broadly at peace until some event in a small part of the world suddenly escalates, raising the prospect of another world war. The weather presents the most vivid example of this intermittent phenomenon. Most of the time, it's boring and predictable. Then suddenly, out of the blue, a devastating extreme weather event hits, whose intensity was not predicted at all, even hours before the event hits. What's going on? This behaviour is a feature of chaos theory, the theory that underpins many real-world systems. Most people have heard of the butterfly effect, that small, uncertain causes can have very big, unpredictable effects. What is less well known is that the butterfly effect can be very intermittent. For most of the time, uncertainty in the flaps of butterflies' wings do not affect the weather for the coming days. However, occasionally they do. With my meteorological colleagues, I've developed a way to tame this chaotic demon. It's called ensemble prediction, developed over the last 30 years and now standard in virtually all weather services around the world. The weather model is run 50 or more times, with similar but not quite identical starting conditions, and with small amounts of noise added to the model equations. When the weather is in a benign, predictable state, all 50 members will have similar types of weather, and the meteorologist can be confident in the prediction. However, when the 50 members diverge rapidly from one another, with some showing extreme types of weather, then the meteorologists know that we're heading for one of these intermittent, unpredictable moments with quantifiably possible disastrous consequences. Disaster relief agencies now use these ensemble predictions to decide when to take anticipatory action, providing regions at risk with emergency food, water, shelter, and medicine before the severe weather hits, or whether the forecasts are simply too uncertain to be able to be proactive in this way. The ensemble technique is now being applied to economics, to health, and conflict prediction, using what are known as agent-based models. But in these latter fields, ensemble prediction techniques are still at the preliminary stages of development. Perhaps in a few years, we'll never be faced with such seemingly unpredictable, "Whoa, where did that come from?" moments again. Insight number two, climate change, a matter of belief? If you were told there's a 70% chance it will rain tomorrow, do you believe it will rain, or do you believe it will be dry? In fact, it's a silly question. You neither believe nor disbelieve. Instead, you try to decide whether a 70% chance of rain is large enough to make you change your plans. Take an umbrella to work, cancel an outdoor event, or perhaps, if you're the regional governor, evacuate an area threatened with devastating floods. Similarly, when scientists predict a 40% chance that, with continued burning of fossil fuels, the temperature of the globe will increase by at least 4 degrees in the next century, do you believe them or not? Just as with the weather forecast, this is also a silly question. The issue is not about belief or disbelief, it's about deciding whether the estimated risk is large enough that it's worth trying to do something to reduce the risk. No beliefs, one way or the other, are needed to answer this question. But how to do this in practice? One idea is to use the concept of the value of a statistical life, VSL. We can estimate VSL by looking at how much extra money individuals would accept to do a job which involved a significant increase in the risk of death or serious disability. The absolute value of VSL in dollars depends on which country the individual lives. An individual in a poorer country will typically accept less to do a dangerous job than an individual in a richer country. Indeed, an approximate value of 100 times the per capita GDP of a country is commonly accepted as a country-independent estimate of VSL, thus about 10 million for somebody in the US and about 200,000 for someone in Bangladesh. Now, by contrast, it's generally accepted that the cost of mitigating climate change will be around 2% of GDP, or for an individual, 1/50th of the per capita GDP. If we accept that the weather associated with a 4 degree warmer world would be such a hell on earth as to be equivalent to incurring a serious disability, then a 40% probability of such climate change makes it overwhelmingly worth taking action to reduce the risk. 40% of 100 equals 40 and is much greater than 1 over 50. Of course, making objective decisions about whether to take precautionary action depend critically on the reliability of these estimates of probability. This in turn depends on the accuracy of the models used. There is in fact a need to improve the accuracy of climate models to guarantee better the accuracy of the estimated probabilities. An international CERN for climate change, where countries pool resources to fund dedicated supercomputing, would transform our ability to estimate and simulate climate change at the regional level, and in this way, give greater certainty to these estimates of risk. Insight number three, noise, and noise in the brain. Not a nuisance, but a resource to be used constructively. Noise is typically thought of as a nuisance. We seek ways to maximize the signal-to-noise ratio by reducing noise, the very epitome of uncertainty, to a minimum. However, for many nonlinear systems, noise can in fact help strengthen a signal, not weaken it. A nonlinear system is one where outputs are not in proportion to inputs. If you win $1 million in the lottery, you will be very happy. But if you win $10 million, you will likely not be 10 times as happy. Maybe only twice as happy. The climate system is a nonlinear system. For example, we believe the way in which the climate system responds robustly to tiny variations in the tilt of the Earth, leading to regular 100,000-year ice age cycles, depends critically on the existence of weather noise on much shorter timescales. Noise is now added to weather and climate models, and this in fact makes them more accurate simulators of the climate system. The brain is a nonlinear system too, running on just 20 watts, enough to power a light bulb. Six orders of magnitude, a million times less than is needed to power a supercomputer. When this 20 watts is spread across the 80 billion neurons in the brain, the signals propagating along the neurons have to compete with the thermal noise of the warm environment in which our cognitive processes operate. The result? We have eureka moments where the noise helps our cognitive processes make connections that would never occur in the deterministic environment of a traditional computer. As many Nobel laureates will attest, such eureka moments frequently occur when the lucky recipients are relaxing, doing nothing in particular. This supports the hypothesis, since such states of relaxation are likely the ones where cognitive processes in the brain are most susceptible to noise. Put this way, we may be the creative species we are because of the constructive effects of noise in the brain. Computers are designed so that we get the same answer every time we perform a particular computation. But such bit reproducibility costs energy. Perhaps this extra energy can be put to better use. Suppose, for a unit of energy, you could choose between a computer which can do one accurate bit reproducible calculation or 50 approximate bit irreproducible calculations, where, for example, 1 plus 1 could vary between 1.99 and 2.01. Which is preferable? For many scientific computations, not least climate prediction, the latter is preferable. Perhaps AI will become truly intelligent once we have found a way to utilize noise constructively in computers, in the same way that the brain has found to utilize noise in our neurons. As Alan Turing said, if a machine is expected to be infallible, it cannot also be intelligent. Noise can be your friend. Setting it to zero may create a sterile environment where nothing interesting happens. Insight number 4, reimagining the laws of physics for our holistic universe. Quantum mechanics, our best theory for the physics of atoms and elementary particles, is typically considered weird and counterintuitive. Take the notion of uncertainty. Next week's weather is uncertain because we can't observe every butterfly in the world. And the flap of the wing of an unobserved butterfly in Brazil could cause an unpredicted tornado in Texas. Uncertainty in quantum mechanics appears quite different. According to quantum mechanics, uncertainty in the properties of atoms does not arise because we can't observe these atoms precisely. Rather, it arises because the laws of physics on the atomic scale are inherently uncertain. Einstein thought that this idea was preposterous, famously claiming, "God does not play dice." In the half century since Einstein's death, the physics of elementary particles has grown by leaps and bounds, culminating 10 years ago with the discovery of the Higgs boson. This physics is based on quantum mechanics. As a result, Einstein's concerns about quantum mechanics have been dismissed as misguided and fundamentally incorrect, and most physicists believe that quantum uncertainty and chaotic uncertainty are quite different things. On the other hand, in the last 10 years, our understanding of fundamental physics has rather stalled. We still have no idea what dark matter is, indeed whether it is matter at all. Neither do we know the origin of the dark energy which seemingly causes the universe's expansion to accelerate. Above all, we still haven't been able to synthesize quantum and gravitational physics into a unified whole. Some physicists believe it's time to go back to basics and ask whether some of our primitive concepts about quantum physics are right after all. Asking whether God really does play dice has got to be near the top of the list. But even deeper is a notion that has underpinned our framework for physical theory for centuries, that to understand the building blocks of nature, we have to look at smaller and smaller scales. Molecules, atoms, nuclei, protons, and finally quarks. Philosophers call this idea methodological reductionism. However, chaos theory provides us with a much more holistic view of systems, one where methodological reductionism fails. If the universe as a whole can be thought of as a chaotic system in its own right, and there are some reasons to suppose it can, then the implications are profound. The large-scale nature of the universe may be just as important for understanding the structure of quarks as quarks are for understanding the large-scale structure of the universe. We may need to reimagine the laws of physics if we're to understand the nature of our holistic universe. Insight number 5. Free will. A new perspective on a very old problem. The question of whether we humans have free will or not must surely be the oldest problem in philosophy. It still remains mysterious. If the laws of physics are deterministic, then by definition, we don't have the freedom to have done otherwise. What we do is determined by what the universe was like yesterday. And what happened yesterday is determined by what happened the day before. Carrying this logic to the limit, it implies that all our decisions were in fact determined by the cosmological initial conditions at the time of the Big Bang. The problem with that is that it seems to absolve us from all moral responsibility. Do we let Hitler and Putin off the hook on the basis that they had no choice in what they did? Does the judge have no alternative than to free the convict when he says that if he hadn't murdered his wife, then his actions would have been inconsistent with those cosmological initial conditions? What's the alternative? It hardly solves the problem to suppose, as many quantum physicists do, that the laws of physics are indeterminate. Now the crime was not predetermined, but the convict can again claim he had no control over what he did. Such indeterminate randomness doesn't solve the problem of explaining moral responsibility either. There is, however, another alternative idea, and it comes from chaos theory. Chaos theory explains why many of the systems we encounter in our daily lives, not least the weather, are unpredictable. But underpinning chaos theory is a timeless geometric structure known as a fractal. Unlike the geometries of ancient Greece, fractal geometries stay the same when you zoom in to reveal small-scale structure. Meteorologist Ed Lorentz discovered the fractal geometry of chaos in 1963, and in my view, it's one of the greatest discoveries of 20th century science. Suppose the universe as a whole evolved on one of these fractals. What would be the consequences? One consequence is that the laws of physics would be unpredictable, but not indeterminate, so that God would not play dice, to quote from Einstein. However, the timeless nature of the fractal means that the Big Bang initial conditions would be no more fundamental than the state of the universe when the murderer committed his crime. In a self-referential way, this means that the murderer's actions determine the structure of the fractal geometry as much as the fractal geometry determines the actions of the murderer. Going one step further, if the laws of physics at their most fundamental describe this fractal geometry, then the murderer's actions contribute as much to the laws of physics as the laws of physics contribute to the murderer's actions. From this perspective, the concepts of determinism and moral responsibility can mutually coexist. The judge can finally send the convict to prison without having to worry about the deep metaphysical implications.
Thank you, Tim. That was Tim Palmer with five big ideas from The Primacy of Doubt, from quantum physics to climate change, how the science of uncertainty can help us understand our chaotic world. For more big ideas from the quantum world, check out our book bite for Existential Physics, A Scientist's Guide to Life's Biggest Questions by Sabine Hassenfelder. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.